Good morning. This is Frank Unholt. I hope you're feeling good, and I hope you're analyzing the budget, and taking all the nitty gritty, things from the budget. Your guess is as right. That is the subject that we're dealing with this morning. The Minister of Finance, Maghrib Wanakatwa, last Friday presented the 2019 budget dubbed Delivering Fiscal Consolidation for Sustained and Inclusive Growth. The 86.8 billion budget is an increase of 2018, which stood at 71.6 billion. This morning, we shall analyze some cardinal presentations. My guests, we have Akabundo Kebuchani, Head of Monitoring and Evaluation, and Chisonde Bright, who is a consultant. Good morning, gentlemen, and welcome.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are you getting, from the people, before we even go into the nitty-gritty of the budget? What do you get, from the people, in terms of their reaction from this, budget, right?
I think looking at the 2019 budget, getting views from the civil society, I would like to mention that I am a researcher from the Center for Trade Policy and Development. So we have gotten views from some of our stakeholders, and the general reaction is that the budget will not be able to meet the expectations with respect to growth.
And Kebuchani?
Well, of course, from our end, I think the budget has been largely received with, I think, positive news of some adjustments in the mining sector. The scrapping, proposed scrapping of VAT and being replaced with the sales tax. Of course, a largely ambitious and brave budget. And of course, the proof is in the pudding. So we wait to see the implementation of certain measures such as scrapping of VAT and see how we can work through to implement sales tax.
All right. Let's look at the theme of budget. Your reaction, to the theme, and in saying so, is the money allocated, to this theme adequate enough to achieve the objectives, of this budget?
Of course, we wish we could have a larger budget because looking at the country priorities and how much has been allocated, I think we still have a lot to do. We have a debt that we are servicing that requires a lot of resource to be mobilized. And, of course, there are certain revenue measures that have been put in place that should, in the end, I think, yield positive results. We've come a long way. I think we have made significant progress in trying to reform the ZRA and also try to build capacity within the institution to raise better revenues.
Patrick, welcome. Better late than never. You haven't missed much at all. We just starting. What is your reaction? On the onset of this in a budget, and the question I've been posing to my colleagues is that is this 86.8 billion adequate enough to translate this theme into reality?
Morning, listeners. Well, the 2019 budget, like we even indicated before it was even formulated, we indicated that it's going to be a very difficult budget. And when it comes to quantums of budget, to be able to decide what's optimal is a very difficult thing. I think you need to look more at the needs. And this is where our concern are, especially coming from civil society for poverty reduction. It's the kind of crowding out effect. I heard my colleague talking about the issues to do with the debt. And clearly the 2019 budget is one that has suffered that setback when you look at social sector spending against debt repayment, but also economic affairs. So it's an issue of a balancing act, but also recognizing that this is not the usual kind of scenario with regards to budgeting. The number of appreciations I'm sure I'll be able to dwell in when we get more into detail. But all in all, we have seen losses on social sectors, but we have also seen gains in terms of some of the things, measures government is trying to put in place, especially with regards domestic resource mobilization, but also partly trying to stimulate the domestic private sector. So we hope that if we fully implement it as well as we should be able eventually to start seeing benefits accruing to the social sectors as well.
Bright, you know, Patrick, you know, mentions the challenges, you know, on the onset, even before the budget was, presented. My question is, you know, how much consultation, is there? We read all these consultations, budget. But after the budget has been presented, you know, a number of stakeholders, you know, come out and say, you know, look, most of our inputs were not taken on board. Is there an adequate consultation? Was there adequate consultation before this budget was presented?
Okay, first of all, let me state the issue of fiscal consolidation with respect to the theme of the budget.
Yep.
In my view, I know my colleagues have said that perhaps the allocation is not enough. In my view, I think it is a bit too much because looking at the MTF, the green paper that was released previously before the budget was presented, the budget was supposed to be about 75.3 billion kwacha. But the budget we are looking at is 86.8 billion, meaning that the government has gone beyond. And looking at the theme of fiscal consolidation, implying that we need to reduce expenditure and make it realigned to our revenues, it means that we have actually gone beyond what we are supposed to have planned for. So for me, I think with respect to fiscal consolidation, the budget has gone beyond. And in the issue of planning for the budget, the challenge that is there right now is the legal framework that is supposed to allow for the views of the people to be incorporated into the budget. There's a law that we have been pushing for, advocating for it to be passed, the Planning and Budgeting Bill. If that comes into effect, it means that possibly all the views and most of the views of stakeholders will now be, it's a legal mandate now for the Ministry of Finance to take up most of those views. And they, as the way the situation is right now, there's no legal mandate or it's not a legal obligation for those views that are passed on with respect to the budget to be considered and put into the national plans.
Akabondo.
Sorry, Frank.
Just
to come in with regards to the size of the budget and the fact that my colleague mentions us overshooting over the MTF projection.
Yeah,
I think it's a double-edged sword. We are definitely in a consolidation period. And one would say we need to ensure that we don't run an expansionary budget. But I think the kind of hard rock we find ourselves positioned is that we also need to stimulate the economy. And one way to do that is to ensure that you adequately budget for that. So the biggest problem when you look at the structure of the budget is that we have a high debt servicing portfolio, which needs to be serviced, and you cannot default on that. But investment into other key sectors, economic affairs and social sectors, equally has to take prominence. So you have to play that balancing act to be able to ensure that you stimulate the economy. Without running that expansionary budget, your economy now also starts to contract. So how do you ensure that as much as you are growing your budget, there's prudency, and I think the bottom line is value for money. And I think that's what we need to start pushing for more. Are we getting the high returns, if it's whatever we're investing in, whether it's debt repayment, that we're prudent with that, and also ensuring we're not accumulating at an accelerated pace, that is something that is sustainable. But even when we accrue, if you look at the 2019 budget, it's talking about foreign financing to a tune, I think, of 28%, I stand. Yeah, somewhere there. Total financing, foreign financing is at 28.4%. So with that regard, what are the modalities for us to finance using foreign financing? We need to ensure, first and foremost, that this is not something that is going to be commercially acquired, like we have been doing in the past, but also the investment that is going to accrue as a result of this, it's one that is going to be of high value to really impact on the economy. So I cannot emphasize, I think the rate at which we are growing now will compound debt repayment will also compound poverty levels in terms of pushing it further if we don't do the right things.
Bright, you know, and Akabondo, you know, Patrick talks about the impact, you know, of the debt. You know, first part of the equation, you know, what is the likely, you know, impact in from this, you know, debt? You know, how much is this debt going to stifle, you know, the economic, you know, growth? The other part of the equation, Patrick talks about stimulating, you know, the economy to respond, you know, to this likely, you know, impact. You know, how do we stimulate, I mean, the government, how do we stimulate, you know, the economy? And I put it to you know, both of you.
Sure. I think my colleague is right in talking about, I think, the size of the budget and the commitments that we have, which is something that I've earlier alluded to. It's important, I think, to realize that even the revenue projections that we make, the idea of collecting money needs a source. And that source needs to be a functional source. And the only functional source that we have is the private sector. Private sector forms the backbone of the country's economy. So if we stifle the private sector, then we won't have any revenue to collect from the private sector. And hence the importance, I think, of putting measures in place to try and stimulate private sector participation in the economy. And so if you look at PMRC's, I think, budget analysis of 2018, we had raised concerns about Zambia's financing portfolio because we had increased domestic borrowing and reduced foreign borrowing. And that, for us, was a concern because we, I think, had raised concerns about how this crowds out private sector investment. And I think the government has come back and they've decided, I think, to reduce domestic borrowing to try and give space to the private sector, I think, to operate. Fundamental challenges remain, of course. Interest rates still remain very high. It makes it very, very difficult for businesses to thrive, as well as, of course, external competition from companies, I think, that are producing goods in environments where their operating costs are relatively low. And so I think as stakeholders, it's very, very important that we sit down with government and try to devise modalities to try and stimulate local businesses and to support local businesses to thrive because that is our source of revenue.
Bright 4% projected growth of the economy. There are some other institutions, I think it's the World Bank, which is talking about, what, 3.4, 3.6. Is this anticipated in growth, you know, again, adequate enough to cushion, you know, this budget, to cushion economic growth?
Of course, if you look at our ideal situation for the country to develop rapidly and deal with issues of poverty, which we are advocating for, eradication of poverty, we need a growth rate of about 7 to 10%. In last year's budget, the projection was 5%. In this year's budget, the projection has been downgraded to 4%. So looking at the issue of austerity, it is definitely understandable that the government has reduced downgraded the growth projection. And the reality is in 2018, we are not likely to reach even the 4% we are estimated to reach. But then if you look at this in the long term, because we have been saying, advocating for the government to manage its debt. Now, the implications or the effects of debt are now setting in. And the government is paying a lot of money for debt payments and debt servicing. And now, because there's limited resource to allocate to economic affairs, for example, which can stimulate the economy. So now we are downgrading GDP. So this is a problem which is complex, which was created because of a rapid contraction of debt.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
What else is contributing to this, you know, lack of, you know, adequate, you know, growth? You know, are they, you know, with foreign, you know, input, you know, a negative impact on this, you know, growth that really, you know, we can't do, you know, anything about?
Most of the times, I think we are, as Zambians, we have always been told that Zambia's growth is very much linked to external forces like oil prices, copper prices, and the like. But in my study, when I was doing my my master's, I investigated the effect of copper prices on economic growth. And my finding was that copper price does not influence the long-term projection of growth. So we usually want to say it's because of copper prices. But I think that leads to government not owning up to the situation of growth, because growth can be stimulated even from economic affairs, from the activities that we allocate and the way the government runs the economy. So we can stimulate higher growth. Zambia has it had situations where growth was high as far as 7%. So it means that it's possible for us to have that level of growth. And if we are willing to, or we want to achieve the Vision 2030, we want our growth to grow very fast for us to reach our middle income status. Yes.
When do you see, you know, the government concentrating in terms of economic growth? I mean, there's every budget, you know, talks about in agriculture. As one sector that really it will present economic growth. You know, I know it takes time, but that really is where the future lies. But most of the time, this growth is not realized in agriculture, including tourism.
So true. I think it's the diversification agenda, but the diversification agenda also that is going to bring revenue to the country. I think a lot of diversification talk is tailored towards activities, but in terms of contributing to the treasury, but also to the forex, that's another question we haven't opened up. And partly when you're looking at the agriculture sector, is to do just that. The 7th NDP recognizes that we need to make agriculture a business away from the way we've been running. Even when you look at the programs under FISIP, FRIA, they're not oriented to stimulating private sector to start agriculture sector to start growing as a business and then contribute to the treasury. It's more to do with household and national food security. And then when you have excess, that's when you start either opening up, closing borders, opening up, closing borders. That demonstrates policy in terms of the direction we are going as a country. So we need to agree, as we did with the 7th NDP, we're talking about a diversified, export-oriented agriculture system. How do we actualize that and invest the necessary requisite in terms of resources, both on the expert side, the extension services, but also supportive infrastructure that is going to allow for that to be able to happen? The problem is that previous budgets, when you look at previous budgets, they've all concentrated on the two components. The FISIP and FRIA has been taking up the larger chunk of it. The other supporting agriculture stimulant measures have not been supported adequately. I'm happy to note with the 2019 budget, despite the reduction there, there's less emphasis on FISIP. I'm sure people argue, no, that's not a good thing, and so on. Yeah. But for me, I think it's a good move. We need to start investing into other sectors, and there's more pronouncement into extensions, things like extension services, building farming blocks, and so on, infrastructure, supportive infrastructure. I hope this is the start of the realization that this can be done. And once it's done effectively, we can see a difference. But also, I think pitching on the issue of stimulating the domestic private sector and growth, this is something government really, really need to take extremely seriously. Because we will not get out of these challenges we are faced as a country if we do not stimulate the domestic private sector. Because for us who are in poverty reduction, it's important for employment creation. And where is that going to come from? It's from the small and medium enterprises. And investment, adequate investments need to be tailored in that direction. The budget, 2019 budget, is a double-edged sword. On one hand, it gives. On the other hand, it takes away. And I explain this. If you look at things like the turnover tax, this has gone up. And this is a flat rate. Turnover tax does not take into consideration costs. It's basically on your turnover, as it says. So it doesn't look at the cost implications of a small guy, and this has gone up. But in the meantime, government also realizes that, no, we need to stimulate the domestic private sector by being away from the market. And this is highly commendable. I think they've dropped from 4% in terms of domestic borrowing to 1.4%, which was part of the hindrances to issues to do with access to finance. high interest rates and so on, because government was very active on the domestic market. I hope they do stay away, and hopefully that as time goes by, we'll be able to create sufficient liquidity to provide to the small businesses to be able to grow. But this is where the backbone is. It's not in the mining sector. We need to ensure that the small businesses start growing. Once they start growing, even the notion of talking about broadening taxes and so on will fall into play naturally. Because once you start growing, then you need to realize that I need to formalize for me to get bigger businesses. Once you formalize, there's more revenue on the part of the government.
Okay, but are you satisfied with the measures that have been sort of put in place, you know, to stimulate the growth in agriculture?
Of course, our concern has been, I think, with some of the measures, of course, repeating themselves. I think if you note the issue of the farm block model, I think, has been sitting in the budget over the last 2 years. Our concern has been also the implementation of the farm block model. One of our proposals was that, look, we should implement the farm block model stage by stage, as opposed to implementing three farm block models at a time. The understanding behind this is that we should be able to achieve one success story, given the constraints that we have on resources, be able to come up with one success story which we can build on. And so the farm block model is a very, very good idea. If you analyze the design, which we had the privilege to, it's a very good model. Builds value chains within the system and supports small-scale farmers. And so this is the way to go, I think, if we have to achieve diversification and creating value chains within the agriculture sector. But, of course, the other concerns that have been raised by my colleague here are issues that I think we've put on record in the past. We've been urging government to try and realign spending in the agriculture sector. By realigning spending in the agriculture sector, we've been saying, look, FISP is not necessarily a bad thing. FRA spending is not necessarily a bad thing. But we think that if some money can be moved from FISP and from FRA into key drivers of growth in the agriculture sector, you talk about extension services, you talk about research and development, livestock management, disease, and all these other issues, I think that play a critical role in building value chains within the agriculture sector, then we can begin to see more revenue coming into the agriculture sector, as opposed to the current scenario that we have.
Right, you're into sorry about this, into trade in a policy. The main complaints, from the farmers, that there's no level playing in a field, in terms of competition in this region. I'm basically talking about in South Africa. We're up against a powerful farming country, for lack of a better way of putting it. Our farmers are threatened by so much imports from South Africa. Is there anything you'd have loved to see in this budget to protect our farmers? I don't like using that word protect, but is there anything, any measures you would have loved to ensure that there's fair competition between our farmers here and in the region?
Maybe let me also first comment on the issue of government increasing borrowing in the domestic sector. That is a good move in terms of it may translate into a reduction in interest rates. But I think the challenge is government has actually increased borrowing generally. So that essentially means that government will borrow more from the from the foreign lenders. Now the challenge with foreign borrowing is the exchange rate risk is very significant. Looking at the kwacha, which is now depreciating, it means that again the issue of debt payments is going to come in the next budget, because now the debt payments are going to go higher than what we're talking about, 27%. So looking at, you need to weigh the two. Do you want interest rates to fall, government stepping aside in terms of domestic borrowing, or do you want higher interest payments next year, because now government will increase this borrowing from 28.1% to 33.2% in this new budget. And most of the borrowing therefore will be will come from the external sector. So that is the complexity of government borrowing. And then with respect to the agriculture sector, I think I'm going to concur with my colleagues that the sector has been run most of the times not as a business, and that is the greatest challenge that we have. The sector is supposed to be run and it's supposed to grow as a business and using a business model. And in terms of protecting farmers, we have a problem because of a high import of agricultural produce from different countries coming into Zambia. There was a suggestion, I think, to put some goods on the list of prohibited goods, for example, tomatoes, things that are locally produced in abundance. They're not supposed to be allowed to be imported from outside. So that can be a measure to protect the local farmers in order for them to grow. But I think the general issue is to run the agriculture sector using a business model.
Right. Before Patrick comes in with the poverty alleviation, let's spend a few minutes on the mining sector, which still remains a major mainstay. Yeah. Of
sorry, Frank. I think for just to jump in on the external borrowing, I think my colleague is spot on, and it's something that we all need to be worried about. But in alleviating some of the risk, especially the exchange risk, one of the things that we've been calling for, and we hope that is the path government takes, it's towards more concessional, long-term borrowing, move away from the commercial markets. And that obviously will mean that we need to bring the likes of the IMF back on the table to be able to bring the necessary confidence in the country, where we move now to more concessional borrowing and bring about partners that will be able to support us in that direction, either from the east or west. It doesn't matter where it's coming from, but we need to move away from this kind of short-term, medium-term borrowing that we've been incurring now, which is very susceptible to volatility on the market, including exchange rates. So let's move to more concessional borrowing, and it's doable. I think it's doable with more political will and demonstration of accountability mechanism, which has been a huge concern, but also demonstrating that we are sticking to what we have already. We have a very robust economic stabilization plan.
How are you going to control borrowing? When the minister, says, we don't need Parliament, to tell us, how much we should borrow.
Well, that's why I'm saying you need very strong political will. Let's just put in what is supposed to, and I think the benefit will actually accrue to everybody, both at political level and the citizens, and ultimately the well-being of our people. We need to be above board and don't look at this from a political perspective, don't look at it from a party perspective, or from our own selfish biases, individual biases, and let's look at what is it that is good for Greater Zambia. And by doing that, I think the legal reforms are necessary. Let's provide checks and balance. I think that the obligation and the task that lies with the Minister of Finance is so huge, the burden of borrowing on behalf of the country. I think you need a very strong team that will be able to look at this and evaluate and say, what are we borrowing this money for? Is it of high value? And if yes, what are the sources? At what rate are we borrowing? And be able to agree, as opposed to putting it in one individual. I know she consults with the technocrats at Ministry of Finance, but it's not sufficient. That debt is actually my debt as a citizen, because it's borrowed on my behalf. So I need to have my representative have a stake when I'm going to incur a debt as a citizen. So I think we all need to be above board, magnanimous, and agree that, yes, we are not in a position we should be, and we have challenges as a country, but we need to move forward and work together and ensure that we do the right things.
Right. Before Akabondo comes in, to take the lead, in terms of the mining sector, vis-a-vis, sales, and tax. A quick one, Bright, the depreciation of the kwacha. What do you see as an impact, on this, budget? Should we be concerned?
Definitely we should be concerned. I think with respect to the exchange rate, we need to understand the policy framework for the central bank. So the Bank of Zambia has two options. Generally, the central bank has two options. They can either pursue price stability, that is maintain the inflation, and they have done this perfectly well. So that is their primary goal, is to maintain price stability, the inflation to be maintained between 6% and 8%. Last year, I think we have seen, and even leading up to this year, we have seen that the inflation has been within the target. But then if they are going to focus on inflation, it means that they have to let the exchange rate be floating. So the exchange rate currently is a floating exchange rate, meaning that the central bank is not having it as a priority in terms of correcting it to be at a stable level. So the exchange rate will float with respect to the demand and supply of Forex in the country. So recently we have seen, of course, because of debt payments again, although the budget was saying it's because of importation of increased importation of oil, but I think from an analytical perspective, it may be because of increased Forex demand for debt payments, because foreign debt is paid using Forex. So if the government is getting more Forex to pay back their debt, it means that the demand in the country for Forex increases, and then the exchange rate will start depreciating. This will have a long-term effect, a medium-term effect currently on the budget, because it means that there will be the actual projected right now how much we are supposed to pay in terms of debt payments. By the time the exchange rate depreciates even further, it means that the actual debt payment is going to increase. That's why you saw last time we had even a supplementary budget because of these debt obligations. So if the exchange rate depreciates again, we are likely to have another supplementary budget increasing the payment for
absolutely
debt.
Yes. More taxes, you know, for the mines, increase in royal tax, you know, sales tax has been introduced to replace VAT. What are the advantages and disadvantages of that?
Right, of course, this is one measure I think that we didn't see coming. I don't think anybody saw it coming.
Not at all.
So I think it's a brave move by the Minister of Finance, I think, to upscale mineral royalty by 1.5% across the bands, and then introduce a new sort of windfall band at 10% for prices of copper which go above $7,500. So looking at these measures, of course, why I say we didn't see this coming, because our colleagues in the mining sector have been very strong in terms of resisting any increment in taxes, and I think we must applaud the government. I think they've maintained a consistent policy environment in the mining sector for a long time. Of course, in our budget submissions, we were concerned about raising production in the mining sector as one way of raising revenue, and it remains to be seen, I think, how we're going to achieve that given the increase in costs to the mining sector, but also an incentive on those that are processing copper products. I think a reduction in income tax from 35% to I think about 15%. Yes, which is a good incentive, I think, for value addition in copper, and I think we remain to monitor, I think, progress that will be made by some of these measures, so that from time to time I think we can have assessments of how effective some of these measures are. Of course, the proposals are not cast in concrete, and I think the minister earlier alluded to the need, I think, for constant dialogue and bringing all stakeholders on board in order to achieve.
Do you anticipate a strong reaction from the mines, to an extent that they might even want to blackmail the government and say, look, we're going to lay off the workers here?
Well, of course, the it's been quiet. The price of copper hasn't been so bad.
Yeah.
So we don't expect any drastic measures from the mining firms. I think we have had instances where some mine owners have gone in the public to brag about how much money they are making from the mining sector, and so I think government has to remain bold in some of these decisions, and it's about time that we got the right revenue from the mining sector. The mining sector, for your own information, they have a lot of incentives that I think have gone down their way. One of them is electricity. I think they're paying below tariff cost for electricity. So I think it's about time we, as a country, put our foot down and said, enough is enough.
Right, we gotta move, you know, fast, you know, as though we can bring in the.
Well, you brought in a question of blackmail.
Yeah.
Well, that has already started.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Like expected, there are cases. I'm just looking at one document here from a named mining company, which is basically trying to. It's stipulated a long list of things that it's starting to cut down because they are operating below LME and so on. I think our core to government is that they need to be very firm. We cannot continue at this path. If you look at even just corporate income tax, how many of the mines have been paying in this country? I think it's a bold move that firstly mineral royalty is non-deductible.
Yeah.
That is a rent. I don't even know how we came up for it to be deductible. If somebody is coming to use your piece of land,
absolutely,
they have to pay the rent, whether they are making whatever they are making there, whether they decide to grow maize or not. Grow on it, the fact that somebody is renting it, they need to pay. And so that is something that is commendable. But also, I think core is to the unions. They need to stand firm. They should not allow this kind of blackmail. And we've been seeing this over the years. Even with the electricity revisions, the first thing we heard is, no, we are going to lay off workers. They've been used as the dangling carrot or the weapon against citizens. But how long are we going to continue at that level? 100 workers against the entire nation.
Right.
Okay. But so eventually, they also need that labor.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, with respect to the mining tax policy, my colleague says it has been relatively been stable. I don't think the mining sector policy has been stable because what we have seen, over a longer period of time, every regime change in government comes with its own mining tax policy revisions. And I think in siding with what can be the solution with respect to the changes in the mineral royalty tax, this is, of course, a good move that the government has put into the national budget. The issue is the mining sector should also realize that Zambians have been advocating for increased benefits from the mining sector for a long period of time. And if they are going to continue fighting the tax changes, then it means that the government will never find an optimal tax change. And if they don't find an optimal tax policy for the mine, then it means that they will not be stable. They will never be stable. So if they want, if the mining companies want stability so that they can project the future, they can expand, and they can see a tax policy which is going to last for many years to come, they should allow the government to come up with an optimal tax policy in the mines. And they should allow the tax policy to benefit the Zambians.
Yeah. Right. It's quickly deal with sales tax, and Patrick maybe can comment on pay as you earn, and which has remained the same, the salaries no increment. I don't see any increment in the civil in the civil service, and also more tax for the workers and the consumers. Very quickly on sales tax, the advantages and disadvantages.
Okay, so sales tax with respect to or compared to VAT, the challenge we had with VAT, especially with in the mining sector, is that the VAT is computed, is tax deductible, computed from the output side of VAT compared to the input side of VAT. And in the mining sector, the output side of VAT was zero rated, meaning the mining sector was not paying any VAT when they are importing or when they're exporting the produce. But then they would claim, because the VAT is computed as deductible from the output and input side, so then they would claim for the input VAT, which they paid on the inputs when they are purchasing them. These amounts of money became very large chunks of money, in excess of 750 million kwacha. And then the government has, in a situation of austerity, we understand that the government wants to get rid of that issue with VAT. So with sales tax, we don't have, it's not deductible, so we cannot get refunds for sales tax. That is the benefit in terms of the situation of austerity, and the government is likely to make more money with sales tax. The disadvantage with sales tax is it can be computed or mm-hmm. taxed at each level of the production chain. So if someone is at the end of perhaps they are selling something, and if it's not known that what they are selling is actually an input in their next chain of production, if a sales tax is now levied at different levels of the sale of the commodity up to the final set of the commodity, you find that at the end the prices of the goods will increase, and then the one who's going to bear the blunt effect the is the consumer. That's the problem with sales tax. But sales tax can be implemented with exemptions, so that if you're buying for resale purposes, for example, you can be exempted so that the price is not passed on to the consumers.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Very quickly, you know, Patrick, the infamous, you know, social cash, you know, program. I see the minister has indicated that there's going to be an increase in terms of the beneficiaries from the current 632,000 to 700,000. You know, is this, you know, going to be achieved? And generally, what is your, you know, response to this?
Well, unfortunately, I was going. Something that I will not be excited about, unfortunately. I mean, it's not an increase. The 2018 budget also had that projection of 700,000 beneficiaries. And we didn't meet that, obviously, given the challenges we had with cooperating partners, commitments not coming through, but also our own fiscal challenges. But also when you look at the overall social protection budget, all of them have actually gone down. So I think it's a huge concern. We need to try and see how do we, firstly, now, in terms of government commitment, yes, it has gone up, because the government commitment previously, I believe, was at 552, if I'm not mistaken. Now to this level. But I think one of the things that we need to try and start working towards now is building the rapport back with the cooperating partners that we're supporting, especially this critical program, such that once that is built and the confidence is built back, the additional amounts that will come through will actually push up further beyond the 700 that we have targeted under the 100% government financing. So it's important that we do that so that we can bring as many people as on board as possible, because really we are talking about austerity, and the shocks of austerity hit the most the poor and vulnerable, and you need to have sufficient safety nets to be able to protect them. And part of that is programs like the cash transfer, which are very, very critical, both at the well-being of individuals as adults, the vulnerable, but also critical for children in those vulnerable households. So these are very, very important programs, and we hope that beyond just the allocations, they'll be reinforced. One of the things that we have noted over the years is that as much as we allocate money to these programs, they are not fully implemented. You find that disbursements by end of year will be around 65%. Yeah. Cash transfer by mid-year this year was about 27% of disbursements. So that's a huge concern for us and remains a concern. So we hope to ensure that this is done rightfully. The little resources that are there, even if they're 100% dispersed and implemented effectively, make a huge difference. So we need to ensure that we commit for more resources to this, but beyond the commitment, ensure that they actually reach the intended beneficiaries.
Are they, before I open the lines, are there enough austerity, measures, to convince other stakeholders, that yes, this government, is serious. Is serious, in terms of managing the economy, developing the economy, and do you see fiscal discipline, being, implemented?
Yeah, right. I think it's very important, of course, that we, identify where the leakages are.
Yeah.
Before we try to fix the roof. If you look at austerity measures that have been put in place, I think largely we have had a challenge with implementing austerity measures that have been put in place. Run down through state-owned enterprises, monitoring mechanisms. Do we have sufficient monitoring mechanisms to ensure, for example, that our state-owned enterprises are adhering to the measures that government has set out? And I think that's where the conversation should start from. We should have a platform as civil society, of course, where we can, have a a look, or I think government can provide regular updates on what has been achieved in terms of the measures that have been put in place, how much we're saving. I think then we can, I think, assess the progress that has been made. But of course, just to add on to what he, my colleague has spoken about on social cash transfers, I think looking at where we're coming from, we've made significant progress. 2016, the increases that we have both in amount and coverage, I think we've come from around 200,000 beneficiaries 2016, and now we are slightly above 600,000. Of course, the pronouncement that has been made to attain a target of 700,000, this is something that was in the 2018 budget pronouncement. And we are very concerned, of course, about disbursements within the ministry. As at mid-year, we were at 27% in terms of disbursement. And it's very, very important, I think, that we take care of poor people. Given the reforms that we've been carrying out, we've been reforming subsidies in the fuel sector, in the electricity sector, and many other sectors. And given our commitments as a country, I think it's important that we, I think, pay particular attention to taking care of the poor.
One question before I open the lines, and please, forgive me, listeners, the subject is, it's very huge. I hope we can have a bit of extra minutes, and I'll be opening the lines, very shortly. The importance of, education, both of you, Patrick and Bright, cannot be overemphasized. 15.3% of the budget, have been allocated towards education. Is this adequate enough to develop human resource? And in saying so, how do you reconcile the continued unemployment of even people are coming and are out of universities? Very quickly, I need to open the lines very shortly.
Okay, so the allocation to education was reduced percentage-wise from 16.1% to 15.3%. I know a lot of people want to look at the absolute increase in the allocation, but I think from a policy perspective, the percentage changes in the allocation show you government priority. And in this case, it means that there is an increase in the budget, but yet very little has gone to the education sector. And we want human development. We want to have more skilled people. And I think education demands more allocation. And I think from that perspective, I would say the allocation is not sufficient. The challenge that we are seeing why this allocation has reduced, as I said earlier, is because of debt payments. Debt payment is 27%. If you combine the payment of the allocation to education, health, plus social protection, it's less than 27%. So it means that debt is actually getting a lot of government resource, which was supposed to go to these social sectors. And then with respect to what we can do in the education sector in terms of skills and development, we need to grow the economy faster than what we are doing. And that is why it is worrying to see growth projections being downgraded from 5% to 4%, and then we don't know where it's going to be next year. If the government continues this trend, it means that the economy grows at a slow pace. We cannot create enough employment for our people.
Excellent. This is Frank and Holt, powerful panel I have this morning. My colleague Bright from Center for Policy and Trade Development, my colleague Patrick from the Civil Society for Poverty Reduction, and of course my colleague Akabondo Kebuchany from Head of Monitoring and Evaluation at the Policy Center. Right. Okay. The lines are now open. 0974-870-877. 0974-870-877. This is Frank and Hot. We're discussing the budget analysis. 0974-870-877 or 0967-877-447. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Your name, please?
My name is Daniel.
Yes, sir, Daniel. What is your question?
I don't know whether he talked about it, so I'd just like to get the gentleman's views there on how it is that from our budget we're paying almost 23 million, I don't know if it's billion kwacha, to debt repayment, and only the combined 21 billion is going to education, and how is that going to help our nation? And is it a really good thing that the majority of our budget is going to debt repayment? How does that work? Thank you.
This is Frank on Heart, 0974-870-877. If you'd like to participate, we're looking at the 2019, you know, in a budget. Call us now on 0974-870-877 or 0967-877-447. Call us now. This is, you know, Frank on Heart. We don't have anybody on the line, you know, yet. Would anybody, you know, like to respond to the last in a question the gentleman asked?
Well, I could come in.
Yes, sir, Patrick.
I think that has always been our concern. I mean, when you look at the high debt repayments.
Let me see if we can, you know, pick up a call and you can continue, Patrick. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. And how are you? You are talking to Brother Morgan within Osaka.
Yes, Morgan, what is your question?
My view on the budget is that, yes, the budget was, and I'm blessed to the way the Madam Finance, Margaret Malakatwe, the way she addressed the parliament, she basically addressed the same budget. But the only budget to analyze is that 15.3% went to education. And we find that to the health sector, at least you look at the health sector and the agriculture sector, I think that's why I was incompetent, because you find that everybody when wake up want to eat. So food is number one. And secondly, when you got sick, you go to the hospital where the health sector. So the money also was so little. So for me to talk about this issue, we are still depending on donors. And you should not get the donors, because the money which we have, our budget, cannot wrap up the year. It's so little. So we shouldn't, we are supposed also to influence the donors to continue funding us, so that our people, Zambian people, continue access the health, continue farmers to grow for more food. This is only the issue what we wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So this is Frank on Hold. Let's see if we can pick up another caller. 0974-870-877. 0974-870-877. This is Frank on Hot, and we're looking at the budget of 2019. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. Your name, please?
My name is Martin.
Yes, Martin. What is your contribution?
Yes. I just want to find out from the panel, because the budget is 86.8. Now, my question is, fire tenders were bought at 42 million. And it was unbudgeted for. Where did this money come from? That's what I want to find out from the budget.
You done? Okay.
From the panel.
Thank you very much. Okay, quickly respond to those questions. You know, panel, Patrick. We caught you before went the line. And please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Firstly, I think on the issue of debt, it's a concern for everybody. That's why we are saying that we need to slow down on debt repayment. This is something the Minister of Finance has acknowledged. This is something the Head of State has acknowledged during his opening address to Parliament. So it's important that we slow down that pace, but also the structure of debt is important. Currently, we are constrained because most of our debt portfolio is in commercial kind of instruments where we have to pay. It's short term, and the interest rates are high, but also quite susceptible to volatility. Kwacha has been playing around, so you see this increment even during the year. You see a spike in interest repayments and so on. So we need to guard against this, and that's why we are talking about more long-term concessional borrowing, where that's a direction we need to move towards, because basically it crowds out expenditure in health and education, and that has come out In the 2019 budget, and it's important also moving forward related to Morgan's question about donor support. We need to bring on board as many partners as possible that can be able to help us during this particular period. Donor dependency is not anything to smile about. I think it's not a good thing, and we need to move towards where we are all 100% able to finance our national budget. But obviously, when you have a fiscal deficit like we have, you need to try and bring on board as many partners as possible to meet the gap that you have in terms of financing and guard against accruing further debt to be able to fill up that gap.
Right. I think the fire thing, or maybe just address the tender process perhaps. You know, do you have like something to come out, you know, out of this budget in terms of ensuring that the tender process is transparent?
Financial management is something that we have been calling a prudent financial management, something we have been calling for a long time. Just tying it from financial management and grant support, we have seen that the amount of resource we're expecting from grants from our donor partners has reduced in the 2019 budget from about 3.4% to 2.2%. So, and I think the percentage is quite low, 2.2% donor funding. Of course, as I said, in a situation of austerity, we shouldn't run to the financial markets to get more loans. We should be at least going to advocate for more at least grants from the donors. That would have been better.
Yeah.
So we were expecting this to go up, but it can't go up because of the issues which came up recently, donor funds being misappropriated, misapplied, and issues to do with that. And then, so with respect to financial prudent financial management, that's why we always advocate that the government programs and policies should be consistent. Yeah. And we're asking for the financial space to be increased in terms of the legal framework that is existing.
Right. This is Frank and Holt. You know, call us now if you'd like to participate. And good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm fine, thank you. Your name, please.
This is Liman Nyerenda.
Yes, sir, Mr. Nyerenda. What is your question this morning?
The question is, I want to find out from Mr. Zonda and how best can we reduce the borrowing? Because the issue here, the way I see it, we're in so much debt and we keep on getting in even deeper.
Yeah.
And then now we're failing to finance our own budget. Then we rely even more on other data. So how do we curve that thing out? And how do we get back to a line where we're able to finance our own budget? Mr. Zonda said that we need to get to a time when we can finance our own budget. But then now, the question is how?
Thank you very much for that. 0974-870-877. This is Frank on Holt, and we're looking at the budget analysis. Do we have somebody on the line? 0974-80877, if you'd like to participate. Good morning.
Morning, Uncle Frank.
Morning. Your name, please?
Lotti from Matero City within a city.
Yes, Lotti City within the city. You know, what is your question this morning?
My question is, I want to find out what was wrong with the VAT and what is the interpretation with the sales tax in like realizing the much desired prospect that the VAT has failed to yield.
Thank you, you know, very much. You know, call us now on 0974-870-877, 0974-870-877. We're looking at the 2019, you know, budget, if you'd like to participate, you know, call us now. This is Frank on Holt. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your name, please?
My name is Chansa.
Sorry?
Chansa.
Chansa, yes, please. What is the question?
The question I want clarified is that how did the 2017 budget perform, given the target of 71 billion before we moved to 86.6 billion? Did we what so far? How have we performed? Because they need to justify the numbers, because you can't just jump from 71 billion to 86 billion. What's the rationale?
Thank
you. Furthermore,
yeah,
I want the panelists to explain. You see, there's this misconception of saying it's an allocation. A budget is not an allocation. For me, a budget is the focus of what you intend to collect or the money you want to make. Now, the allocation is when you realize the budget. And many a time, these budgets have not been realized because you're going to look at, for instance, health sector, whatever has been proposed. That's the focus. Now, the actual, what we're interested in is the actual allocation. That is what matters. Otherwise, it becomes an academic exercise. And furthermore, you've seen that revenue collections, why the revenue collections from our tax have dropped down from 75% to 64%. Why? And I see a contradiction where now they're saying that we are slowing down on borrowing, but the gap is now being financed through introducing new bills and borrowing through bonds. That is basically borrowing. So there's no slowing down borrowing there, as far as I'm concerned. I need a comment on those issues.
Thank you, you know very much. You know, Akabondo, I think, deal with the issue related to VAT, sales tax, and then Chizonde, you can, deal with the mechanism to reduce on borrowing, I think. And then Patrick can, deal with the budget review, development, the last, question. Let's start with Akabondo.
I think the rationale behind... Of course, abolishing VAT, I think, stems from the fact that we are spending a lot of money in refunds, particularly to the mining sector. I think on a year-on-year basis, we are spending around about $700 million to refund the mining sector. And so introduction of, I think, the sales tax eliminates the problem of the VAT. Of course, it has other challenges, which I think my colleague had earlier alluded to, which is... the problem of cascading, where you have a build-up of tax on tax as you go along the chain. And, of course, there are cures for this. One would be to, say, impose the sales tax at point of importation or when the manufacturer sells a particular good, you impose it there. Or coming up with a schedule with exemptions and varying, I think, taxes on services and goods, which is a pretty much complex process. And that's why I think the minister was very open, I think, to suggestions. But I think the government position is that come, is it April next year, we should be able to implement the sales tax and abolish the VAT system.
Managing the debt, doing away with most debts.
Okay, so the debt management is it's a multi-strategic approach that needs to be taken. If you want to deal with debt, you need to look at all the facets of debt. Prudent financial management is one of them. And then creating strategies for managing debt. We have been advocating for things like the setting up of the sinking fund to reduce the upcoming debt payments for the Eurobonds. We have advocated for government to move away from borrowing in the commercial market. So that we don't want to hear that the government has issued another Eurobond, because that would be a serious problem for us. So the government can engage partners like the IMF. We have been advocating for the government to engage the IMF to bring them back on the table, because that will enhance oversight over the macroeconomic situation of the country. The IMF comes with conditions. I know people think that the conditions are bad, but those conditions are oversight conditions where they'll hold the government to task to be able to implement what they have said they're going to implement with respect to the policies. And then we're going to see this scaling up of debt coming down, because we are now borrowing concessionally, and then we are getting rid of our commercial loans, and then we have an oversight from the IMF. Then we prepare for the future coming principal payments using a sinking fund. So those are some of the issues that we're saying. Fiscal consolidation is the major thing the government has concentrated on currently to reduce the issues of debt, debt accumulation. But then fiscal consolidation has been predominantly on the mobilization side. So far what we have seen is targets to get more revenues. There's this drive that is there. Last, the target was 18% of GDP. Now we have 18.7% of GDP, meaning that there will be more mobilization this coming year. But on the part of expenditure, we are seeing that expenditure is still going up. That's what I was saying, that with respect to the theme that we are pushing for delivering fiscal consolidation, we are not supposed to be scaling up the budget beyond what the green paper said. We are supposed to have at least been in the margins of 75 billion kwacha, closer to the green paper stipulation. Yes.
Performance review of the previous budgets in relation to the 2019 budget.
Yeah, well, we are yet to do a full analysis when the year comes to an end.
Yeah.
But if anything to go by, if we go by the mid-year review, I think it wasn't a very good indicator because most of the budget lines did not perform very well. Like I indicated, if you look at programs like cash transfers at 27, most of the social sectors were hovering between that, 20 to 35, 45 at the most highest, including economic affairs. So we've had challenges in terms of meeting the obligations as set out in the national budget to be able to adhere to it. So justification, I'm sure, for increasing the budget threshold is basically demand. I think everything is going up. The population is growing. The needs for social services is ever growing. You need to provide for that. So you cannot have a static budget. But just to agree, I think planning is very, very critical. And we need to do due diligence. The medium-term expenditure framework, like my colleague has indicated, should inform the national budget. So it means that when we are doing projections, they should be quite in line. We should do a robust job of doing that. So because then you're doing medium-term and then informing the 7th NDP and ultimately the Vision 2030. So if we don't do due diligence with that, then you see the budget also not speaking to those issues and objectives we want to achieve as a country. Why revenue has dropped from 75 to 65, I think it's a very simple answer. The expenditure has been growing, but domestic revenue has also not been growing at the pace expenditure has been growing. So that's why even the aggressive move towards enhancing domestic resource mobilization. By any standard, when you look at economic theory, or even just in comparison with the region, when you're talking about optimality, the rate that we were at 2015, that is extremely low if you're going to look at GDP versus your capacity to collect revenue from that. You should be above 20%. So government is right to try and enhance domestic resource mobilization efforts. It's important. And I think it's the most sustainable way of financing your resources. Mm-hmm. But as you're doing that, make sure that you don't hurt your people as well. You need to ensure that the fiscal measures that are put in place are equitable, but also going to stimulate your economy to be able to realize enough from that. And that's where the trick comes in, especially when it comes to providing relief, things like pay as you earn. As you know, it has been one of those low-hanging fruits. We haven't received any relief this time around. But further to that, we have the NHS, National Health Insurance, which is now taking, which will take effect in January, meaning to erode disposable income further. So how do you balance between your ambition to raise resources, but also provide relief to the people, especially when the cost of living is going up? And it's important that that is done. And part of that is being responded to in the 2019 budget, where government is trying to tackle the issue of aggressive tax planning. I think this has been a huge problem for the country for a very long time. There's extreme aggressive tax planning in this country, both mining sector and even other sectors. So they've now put in higher penalties for transfer mispricing. I hope that that will be implemented. I would have put it even higher, but I think that is a commendable thing. So that those that are engaged in this, I think businesses also need to realize that we are here for a win-win situation. Government needs to provide a conducive environment for businesses to be able to thrive. But when businesses also engage in aggressive tax planning, now you engage in this kind of tug-of-war, suspicious mode where nobody gets to win, really, at the end of the day. So we all need to do our right things, make sure that our policies are clear enough, our policies are well-directed and well-meaning, and those that are on the receiving end, in this case businesses, they do responsible business, pay the right taxes, and I'm sure we'll all benefit when the economy is doing very well.
The onus will have to be on ZRA, you know, to collect as much, you know, revenue to support, you know, this, you know, your budget. From where you seated, you know, is ZRA in a position, you know, to perform optimally?
Of course, ZRA has a huge challenge. I think one of their biggest challenges has been the issue of capacity in administering even the VAT. With a more complex, I think, sales tax, I think that even adds a bigger burden. So huge considerations have to be put in place to make sure that capacity is built at ZRA. Resources are provided to ZRA for implementation of new tax measures. In the mining sector, of course, we've come a long way. It's an evolving sector. I think our colleagues in the mining sector, I think, like I said earlier, are quite strong. So we really need to have a dynamic team at ZRA, I think, to follow up with the new trends and new technology and all the surprises that we should expect, I think, from the mining sector. I think already there have been some responses from there. So it's important, I think, that government pays particular attention to building capacity within ZRA so that we are able to realize, I think, our aspirations as a country. Very, very important.
Just now that I go back to financial management, even in a difficult economic situation where you expect service delivery to be facilitated, we still hear of departments sending money back to the treasury at the end of the financial year. Now we hear of money sitting in the bank, which is supposed to go to social delivery, sitting in the bank, and nobody knows why this money is sitting in the bank. What does this tell you?
I think, like my colleague just mentioned, it's the issue of budget implementation. Implementation is not the same as allocation. So we're usually very excited to hear that this amount of money has been allocated to social protection, this amount of money has been allocated to health. But at the end of the day, what matters is how much of that money really reached that sector, how much of that money was spent in that regard, in accordance with that budget item or budget line. But then, so we are hearing the issues of social protection being about 25-27% in mid-year. It means that a lot of resource that was allocated to that sector has not yet been spent. So in terms of prudent financial management, I think we need to go a bit further than just looking at the budget allocations and push for the government to also improve on budget implementation so that these monies can reach where they're supposed to go. Yes.
Right. This is Frank and Holt. And I've taken a couple of more calls. 0974-870-877 is the number to call us. 0974-870-877 or 0967-877-447. This is Frank and Holt. Call us now on 0974-870-877. Hello. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Antonio.
Morning, morning. Who is speaking?
This is Panji calling you from within Osaka.
Yes, sir, Panji, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not clear about the budget. The budget has been announced here, but we don't know how much funds are available at the moment, because the government of the day is preferring on the borrowing. So I want to be clear on the amount which is available out of the budget.
In terms of what? The total, amount or what? Could you be specific?
The total amount of the budget, I know it's very clear.
Yeah.
But I want to know how much funds are available at the moment.
Which funds now?
The money has been organized at the budget was... Hello?
Yes, go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to be clear. The funds which are available out of the budget.
Okay. All right. We got you. Okay. Right. And we're taking another one or two questions. 0974-870-877. This is in a Frank and Hawk. 0974-870-877 is the number to call us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Could you switch off the radio, please? Right. Okay. What is the question?
Yeah, I really wanted to ask how much money has been allocated to youth empowerment?
Fine. How much money has been allocated to youth empowerment? Go ahead.
How best can they do it that they allocate the money to the appropriate youth? So recently I've been seeing Baker's Little and Youth Empowerment Fund, but it seems like the people benefiting are not really youth.
You're done?
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
Thank you very much. 0974-870-877. Let's see if we can take in
our final caller, 0974-870-877. This is Frank on hold. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Frank. This is Daniel Kapambwe.
Yes, Daniel. What is your question?
My concern is on the fuel levy. Is it necessary that the government should maintain the fuel levy when they've introduced the toll gates, the tolls?
All right. Thank you so much. You know, maybe we're taking another caller. 0974-870-877. Do we have somebody online? Yes. Good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Morning. Your name, please?
You?
I'm fine,
Elias.
Thank you. Sorry?
My name is Elias.
Yes, Elias. Go ahead. Elias.
Yes, Elias. Elias.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
Okay, great. What my concern is, you know, with the budget, is that we're not moving towards being sustainable as an economy, self-sustainable as an economy, because I was looking at statistics. Zambia is currently importing about $3.9 billion worth of imports. The biggest country to which we're importing commodities from is South Africa, $2.1 billion. Mm. And when you look at it, most of it is foodstuffs, machinery. Now, these are things that we could do ourselves. You understand what I mean? So, I still budget there should be an allocation more to industrialization and productivity, you know, by the government, by the state, in their own industry, produce vaccine, food, and all those other commodities, you know, turning raw products into finished goods. And then we don't implement policies where we don't have to import so much food stuff from Africa. Because the only way that you can have a surplus to be able to implement debt repayment.
Thank you very much, you know, for that. You know what, I can wonder, maybe quickly run through the allocation very quickly in terms of the two questions, and then, Patrick and Tizonde can, deal with the issue of imports and, yeah. Okay. Akabond?
Yes, of course. I think the question was, the first question was not very clear.
Mm-hmm.
He was asking, he was saying he knows the amount that's been proposed, I think, for spending, but he doesn't know how much is...
Yeah, I think
did you get that? Yes. On the, yeah.
He was. I think in his perspective, he thinks that government collects money, revenues, mm-hmm. and then when they are coming up with a budget, they have these resources already waiting for disbursement. Mm-hmm. But then the budget process or the way the government runs the fiscal space is a bit different. They can make a budget and allocate resources as per plan of the budget, but then the collection of revenues and everything, the collection of grants and the issuing out of borrowing, everything happens simultaneously with the actual spending of government. So we cannot say that the government has money for this 86.8 billion right now, but then during the course of the year, there will be taxes collected, there will be revenue from maybe issuing out of a loan, there will be grants from donor partners. All these monies will now eventually come in, and then once they come in, they'll be spent with respect to the plan of the budget. Yes.
The youth, I think, you know, specifically asked for if there's any allocation for youth.
I think the budget statement doesn't explicitly talk about an amount that's been allocated to the youth, but instead, I think, talks about measures, I think, that are there for youth empowerment. And I think there's... issues to do with skills training and government targets to train about 3,000 youths in 2019, I think up from 2,500 in 2018. I think that's one of the measures that has been put in place for youth empowerment.
Very quickly, you know, with the imports, and he's talking, we're importing too much from South Africa.
Definitely we want to be more reliant in the agriculture sector. I think previously maybe the speaker was not on air to get our... When we explained a lot of issues to do with the agriculture sector, we wanted to run as a business instead of more or less like... the way we are running it right now, so that we can make it more reliant, we can get most of the produce that we are importing from South Africa to come into to be produced within Zambia, so that we can reduce our importation. But I think something that to also bear to note is that Zambia has been having a trade surplus for some time now. So in terms of looking at exports and imports, I think our imports are still lower than our exports in terms of actual earnings. But then we want to also be getting more from exports, getting more forex into the country. Mm.
Yes. Sorry, let me see if I can take in. I think there's a caller frantically trying to get through. And I hope this is the last caller. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Could you quickly, you are the last caller. What is your name, please?
Yeah, my name is Charles Masande.
Mr. Masande, yes.
Make a comment on yesterday during the breakfast meeting, Honorable Mwanakatwe pointed out that while there is a ban of timber, there is a lot of timber which she found in China. And I don't know why, when we went to meet the budget, then we are not harnessing the traditional exports. While our timber is being exported by the Chinese, then we go there to borrow money. Is that sensible? And at the same time, copper is so good that we took London metal exchange. What are we selling? That's why we want to the government to promote auctioning of our own products at local here in Zambia. Otherwise, we can't have them borrowing instead of making consistent policies on our profit. That's my observation.
Thank you.
Without that, the budget won't be.
Thank you very much for that. A quick response to that, it's only before we close in the program.
So the encouragement of non-traditional exports is actually very much welcome, so that we can get more forex from other commodities instead of just the traditional ones we have been exporting. Mm. And the observation, I think, about timber is, I think, beyond the economic analysis realm.
I think on timber, the whole idea of trying to ban timber exports is to try and encourage value addition locally. And I think if you've been following previous budget pronouncements, I think there were measures which were put in place to try and encourage value addition, I think, by having 100% capital, I think, duties waived, I think, for importation of capital equipment in the agriculture and, you know, timber sector, to try and encourage people, I think, to bring in machinery without paying duty and invest in that sector. So I think the motivation still remains the same, to try and discourage people from exporting raw timber and encourage...
Well, if I could just come in. 2019 budget has actually removed the ban on export of timber, and basically indicated that we are going towards an auction, public auction of timber, of all forms of timber. I do agree partly with government on that move, because there's been a lot of illegal timber export that has been happening, and if revenue which should actually accrue to the country, which is going out there. But I think it should have also been followed up with a tax measure where you introduce an export duty on raw timber and then encourage even zero rate processing of timber within the country, so that you promote processing. But even those that are exporting, because it's a commodity that is on demand out there, you earn both from your exports but also from taxation through an export duty.
Right.
So I think that should have been done.
As we come to an end, I'll go around, you know, as we come to an end.
Sorry, there was also the issue of I think auctioning of minerals. I think emeralds are being auctioned locally, I think, at the moment. I think that's one measure, I think, that's been in place for a long time. I think a caller was trying to seek clarification on auctioning.
One issue just before we close, you know, which is away from this discussion, we'll be closing, you know, the show. There was an issue where, you know, before this program, you know, where during the breakfast, you know, show, talking about service management, you know, which was not very clear. You know, could you quickly, you know, clarify?
Sure. There was an issue, I think, which was raised regarding two statements, I think, that came from the Honorable Minister of Finance, Margaret Mwanakatwe, regarding the cost of service study, as well as a conflicting statement which came from the Minister of Commerce. encouraging, I think, investors in independent power producers to come into the country, because the cost of service study had been concluded and that everything was done. And on this one, I think I'll go with the Minister of Finance, because her position, of course, is correct. The cost of service study had some challenges. We should expect a statement from the Minister of Energy in Parliament, I think, to clearly outline, I think, the new plan, although I think the Minister of Finance has hinted on the direction that we're taking. There were also concerns that money has been lost through the previous person that was contracted, which is not the case. And I thought that maybe I should just set the record straight. Of course, this is a donor-supported study. And so, as a country, I think we have not, other than the time that we've lost, I think, in trying to get this thing going, resource-wise, we have not lost anything.
Brilliant. Okay, I'm going round now, you know, starting with you. They say the eating is in the pudding. You know, what would it take to implement, you know, this budget successfully? Very, very briefly, we go around. And Patrick closes.
Of course, to implement an ambitious budget, particularly one that goes against other forces. You look at a mining sector, I think, requires a lot of courage. I think we have to be bold in our implementation of the budget. I think we should not go back, I think, on some of the pronouncements, particularly the ones that we've set out for the mining industry. We should continue, I think, with engaging with key stakeholders, Parliament, as well as other stakeholders, I think, in implementing this budget. And more importantly, I think Parliament needs to wake up. We have had situations where year in, year out, we have put recommendations before Parliament, particularly on legislative reform, which is intended to help government to save money. Talk about Public Procurement Act revisions. I think we have time and again spoken about benchmarking pricing, which is supposed to save government money. We have talked about implementing project appraisal. All these measures, I think, aimed at getting government value for money for whatever they are putting in. And I think it's important that Parliament, I think, moves in the direction of ensuring that this legislation is put in place, so that the country gets value for money and government saves money. Talk about planning and budgeting bill, of course, which is cited even in the Public Finance Management Act, which has since come into effect, but the planning and budgeting bill still remains before Parliament. Loans and Guarantees Act revisions, I think we also need that before Parliament. And all the other important legislative reforms, I think, that will add budget credibility must be dealt with, I think, with a matter of urgency.
Chizonde?
I think for this budget to be realized, with respect to the mines, as my colleague has said, we need to have that commitment to our targets and commitment to what we have revised in the mining tax policy. We know that the mines are going to respond, and they're going to, as we were saying, tug of war with mines, and they'll say the workers are the scapegoats all the time. But then the government needs to step its foot down this time around and say the revisions in the MRRT and the revisions in introducing some form of a windfall tax, the revisions in making a mineral royalty tax non-deductible from income tax, those revisions are going to stand their ground. And another thing that is going to be required is transparency with respect to debt. Government needs to come out clear how much debt we now have, how much we are paying, so that the stakeholders. There are a lot of stakeholders in this country who are very analytical, who have very good insights, very good advice. Government needs to be transparent in order to receive those technical inputs, in order to know how to handle the issues of debt. So transparency will be key. Financial management is the other thing. So we need to stick to prudent financial management. We don't want to hear issues of misallocation, misappropriation of funds, because donors are going to reduce further the budget. Then we need to manage this issue of debt. Stay the ground towards the macroeconomic goals we have set out. Last year, 2018 budget, looking at the goals, only about 2 out of 8 goals which were set have been more or less achieved. But the other goals have not been achieved. International reserves and all other issues, they haven't been achieved. So we want the government to be more committed to the macroeconomic goals in order to realize the 2019 budget.
Patrick?
Yeah, well, my colleagues have tackled a number of things. Mine is just, I think, let's be practical. Let's stick to the budget. Let's implement it, and also let's implement the other things that we've said we're going to do in the economic stabilization plan. And once we stick and we retain budget credibility, we should be able to make quite some progress. But beyond that, also, I do agree with the Minister of Finance. A lot of negative sentiments are hurting the economy. But also government needs to play their part to ensure that we have the positive sentiments in this country.
Yes.
Be open enough and communicate effectively. They need to be proactive in communicating, including the head of state. He needs to take it up on himself to say, this is where we are, this is what is happening in the country. Tell people what is going on. Without information, you have all this wrong information going around, and this is the age of social media. People just produce something, throw it out there, and it's taken as gospel truth. So government need to be extremely proactive, and for us, it's extremely of concern because it's hurting the poor the most. When the kwacha fluctuates beyond the macroeconomic fundamentals based on sentiments, the cost of living is affecting the old woman somewhere in the compound. So we need to guard against this and ensure the right information is put out there. But also, let's manage our debt. I think this is the elephant in the room everybody keeps talking about. So let's ensure we do the right thing.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, thank you, very much. This has been, Frank on Holt on a Tuesday. This has been quite, a marathon, program. I would like to say thank you to my guests, this morning, my good friend Patrick Shindano, Executive Director, Civil Society for Poverty Reduction. Akabwondo Kebechani, from the Policy Monitoring and Research Center, and of course Chizonde from the Center for Trade Policy Development. And just to inform the listeners that this program has been brought to you by the Center for Trade Policy Development and of course Policy Monitoring and Research Center. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Some thought-provoking issues, and I mean it's a big subject, and we hope and pray that it will benefit our country. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Horton Frank. Until Tuesday next week, good morning.